Is anyone here? What did you find?
You are listening to Supernatural Confessions.
From then, from this day forth, he is known as the man of the house, Joseph Dakota.
Still the man of the house. Still the boss of the house.
Perth right now. Is it Perth, Western Australia?
Perth, Western Australia, that's right.
And equally far is that lady on my right. She is Sonia Kurana, all the way up in Sembawang, godforsaken place, surrounded by forest and the occasional loud motorbike that goes by as we are doing our recording. So she represents the super rational part of the team, and she will be giving you the what could have been if it's not the Hantu on this show. So the four of us will be telling you real confessions given by real people. But stay tuned to the end of the show. 11:30 p.m. will be our featured confession today. And this is the confession that got Sonia really freaked out. Last week we talked about that. Today we are showing you Afat's confession that's happening at 11:30. Also big props to Alvin De Cruz, working tirelessly behind the scenes. He is our smooth operator. And lo and behold, I got news today that Alvin, together with Joe and Kim, have asked if they could stream live on Monday. And this show, the new show that they are doing, is hosted by none other than the very elusive man behind the scene, Alvin De Cruz. So I'm looking forward to that one from you guys. I've been taking sneak peek behind the scenes, and I think you guys are hilarious. So looking forward to that one. And as always, if you're listening to this on YouTube right now and you want to listen to the podcast version, join us every Monday, Spotify, Apple, Google, produced by Kim himself, tirelessly over the weekend. Monday night on Spotify, we have the podcast version of this show that you're watching, but stream as a podcast. On Wednesday, we have storytelling. And next coming Thursday, we have Where is Chichi once again. So fully packed week for you guys. We are always making improvements and changes based on what you tell us and what you want. So let us begin the night today, the 8th of October. As always, we get this out of our system first, and we let Kim tell us a joke, because SC doesn't only stand for Supernatural Confessions, it sometimes stands for stand-up comedy.
Well, you have a few other choice words for SC as well.
Yeah, but sometimes he throw me the ball, but sometimes he does not. Like last week, I was waiting for him to throw me the ball, but he did not. You know, until all the way halfway through the show, then I get to slip in the underwear jokes. But this week, suddenly, you know, he throw me one. Recently, I went to look for a job. I guess I was not gonna be accepted in the job. It's a customer relation kind of job, lah. So they asked me, when a customer come, what should you ask the customer? Then I say Ray or well done. So apparently that is not the thing that you should say at the crematorium.
Well, the one thing you don't say is charred.
Every week the jokes get worse and worse. And
I'm waiting for the day until like Eugene say, "Okay, not like Kim, cannot already lah. Like, don't do jokes anymore. Just move on with the
stop."
And I think we should tell the audience today. Ladies and gentlemen, we like you guys to comment on this one. This is a very serious question for all you fans out there who's really listening to it right now. We have a serious question. If we were to get a tattoo, a Supernatural Confessions tattoo, and this is the design that we are going to get, do you approve of this design or not?
You should do a poll.
I can do a poll on Facebook, but not on YouTube.
Yeah.
Would you like us to get this matching tattoo of all three of us?
Five of us. Elvin's in, don't forget that guy. He's quiet, hiding, not saying anything. Five of us.
It's quite cute. It's the Pac-Man ghost, right?
Yeah.
Is it the Pac-Man ghost?
Yeah. So I just drew this like literally 5 minutes before the show. Yeah. So don't judge the kindergarten drawing.
Yeah, I was going to talk about that. If that is the exact thing that's going to go on, then
we can ask the tattoo artist to do it better, lah. This is just a draft, Cikgu. Just a draft, Cikgu.
Yes, please submit your draft for approval.
Well, okay.
Oh. I like what SQ Fong says. Print on a long sleeve T-shirt or shirt. Mm. Hey, why not?
Not bad, not bad. Oh, you sent a vote out. Thank you. Mm. Thank you, Evan.
Nice.
All right. And for today's confession, we have from Wira Chai. Faka Dong Dong Wira Chai. He has made a confession. This one is voiced over by one of the, but not the first sexiest voice in SE, by Ducky Joe. We also have a confession from Aaliyah, voiced over by Linda Cornfield, the lady with the accent. It sounds very much like the host of CNA, but then she breaks into the local colloquial accent and Singlish, and it's just hilarious as hell. In your KYH, in your Know Your Hantu, today we talk about Saka. Saka. And also we have with Sekolestika. Sekolestika talking about Mutiara Hotel.
Right. Saka got so many. This is also Saka when you tripod somebody, right? You try and
when Joe Saka you lah.
When I got Saka you, yeah, I was just gonna say that. Hey, what? Look at the face.
I'm not gonna participate.
I see the motorbike again.
The motorbike saves the day.
That is Sonia hopping onto a bike to come and do something to us.
I can only ride my scooter in the car park.
Ray Lim says, right, I'm here for Kim and for his jokes. So Kim, as long as the audience loves you for your jokes, it's going to be a weekly thing.
Why are you guys supporting that? It's painful.
Yeah, but you know, nobody talked about where the tattoo is going to go. It's like, where would you put it, guys? Where would you put your tattoo?
I don't know. I probably poll the audience for this one.
Ask them where they think we should.
Where do you guys want the tattoo on the part of our body? I mean, it's also subject to whether our part of that body is available or not. I mean, I don't know whether Joe's tattoo is all the way until up his butt. I'm not sure, but you know.
When you stay in the haunted hotel room with me, Kim, you're going to find out.
Uh-oh.
Anyway, it's 10:09 right now. Let's get straight to the confessions. Kim, you've produced this show today as well. Give us a cliff notes on what to expect for the next one.
The first one is actually from a name that we have always seen in the post and in the group, whereby it's Wira Chai. And this is about his ex-colleague. And this happens quite a few years ago because he brought in the name WWF, World Wrestling Federation. It's not even entertainment yet, so you know how long was it ago. And something happened to the friend, but I guess it's what's scary is how he described the friend when he go and visit the friend after he got sick. It's the thing that happened to the friend. It's so much like something that we actually know. So I'm not going to say too much about it. Let's listen to the confession. All right. Then talk about
this.
It.
This confession is titled Akiat by Wira Chai.
Akiat by Wira Chai. It was around 1987 or 1988. I was working as a storekeeper in Seagate Technology in Kallang Bahru. It was the height of the World Wrestling Federation or WWF. Hulkamania was running wild. My colleagues and I were crazy about wrestling, really crazy. My friends and I would identify with different characters, and me, I was personally the Macho Man. There was a young guy in the department who was in his 20s just like us, whom everyone called Akiat. He was an unassuming guy who was of average looks and height. He didn't talk too much, but we used to arm wrestle each other during the lull periods at work. Sometimes we would go for beers and food at Lavender Food Court after a long day at the office. One day, the ladies in Akiat's department told me that he was possessed. A few of us agreed to pay him a visit after our shift ended. I remember he lived in Toa Payoh. Yeah, it is Toa Payoh again. We went to his apartment and were greeted by his parents and elder brother. As we entered, we saw a few monks in robes seated at the dinner table, chanting. We went straight to Akiat's room, and what we saw was shocking.
His hair was disheveled, and he had dandruff all over his shoulder. Akyat's nose was dripping with nasal mucus, and saliva flowed down from his mouth. We spoke to him, but he did not acknowledge us. We started talking about work and wrestling and stuff, and still he didn't respond. After a while, we gave up and went out to the living room, leaving him behind, seated on his bed. We got talking to his brother and asked him what had happened. He told us that Akyat had come home a few nights ago saying he felt like he was being followed by something. What? He could not be sure. That next morning he woke up like the way we found him in his bedroom. He didn't want to eat or drink and urinated frequently in his pants. By the time the brother explained this to me, I noticed that the monks had finished their chanting and had left. I took this opportunity to ask permission to be with Akyat alone, and the family agreed, so I went back to his room alone and closed the door. There was only Akyat and I. I started to ask him what was wrong and how I could help. He didn't respond but was looking down on the floor. In a flash of inspiration, I asked him if he was Akyat. The transformation was abrupt. Suddenly, he sat up, ramrod straight, turned his head towards me and grinned. I looked into his eyes. That moment felt like we both just stared at one another. I looked intensely into his eyes and they were dark, really, really dark, and there was no reflection in them at all, just the deepest black. It was something evil and sinister. I felt it to my bones. The hair on my neck and arms stood up. His eyes showed me something very evil was inside him. This was the second time in my life that I actually felt fear. This type of fear is very difficult to explain in words, and he never stopped grinning. Something in his eyes told me to leave him alone or something else. Something bad would happen. Just then, his elder brother opened the door and asked him to eat his dinner. Akyat just slowly got up, walked out, and sat at the dining table. His brother said every time the monks came to chant, he would eat. Once the monks left, he would be like any other person again. We left shortly after that. In the coming days or weeks, I can't remember, the company terminated his services due to his condition. We didn't visit him after that. The last thing I heard was that Akyat was sent to Woodbridge Hospital, now known as IMH. This was likely a case of someone suffering from a psychological disorder, or so the medical people will tell you. But I believe this was a genuine case of possession by evil spirit or spirits.
This confession hits a very raw spot for me. Joe, since you were the one who handled this confession and you voiced over it, why don't you tell us what do you think about that?
This confession reminded me of last week's confession about the kind of possession, right? And the exorcism at someone's house. But, you know, like I probably don't have anything to dissect this or kind of, you know, and we certainly don't want to debunk it. But I find the fact that something or that person just stops, turns around and grins at someone, just not saying anything, look, that would scare the crap out of me. That's a no for me.
That's so creepy.
Yeah.
It's either it's like when they look at you that way, it's either you look like a giant ice cream or...
You know, a giant ice... Are you hungry, Sonia? Are you hungry right now?
So I did not expect that.
I was like, wow.
A few seconds of...
So whoever that is new here on YouTube, if you watch previous episodes of Sonia, it was so much different. When we came on YouTube, she was something else, which is I have no explanation on that. So yeah, Sonia, why? Yeah,
supernatural. Are you trying to insinuate that
you became a better woman?
I'm possessed. Is that what you're saying?
It's a trap, Kim. It's a trap.
I'm not saying that you are possessed.
Okay, let me remind you. Let me go get my knife. I will remind you of who I am.
Kim,
what Kim meant to say was not that you're possessed, is that you have Pizzazz!
Nice save, okay. Nice save.
Joe, yeah. You were saying
I think it's just the look. I think it's the incongruence of that person's actions and the fact that he's meant to be possessed that just, you know, creeps me out. Like, I don't, if I'm there, I wouldn't even care if this guy was possessed or whether this guy was faking it. I'm out of the room straight away. I don't like stuff like that. Because I remember I telling you guys about the dream that I had of my father, where he just started smiling and grinning and just it got bigger and bigger. I don't know.
So a smile is not always friendly. You've got creepy smile and then you've got the same smile. So there's so many variations of that smile, right? I get what you mean.
Mm.
Yeah. But Joe, you have been
a shy cat.
Joe, you have as in your profession as a psychologist.
Psychologist.
You do visit people in many different institutions. What's the line that you would try to figure out? What are the signs you would figure out if someone is mental or someone is possessed? Is there a sign for that?
Officially, no. I'll have to say that in all my years working in psychology that I haven't met someone that I've looked at and gone, you know what, this person's possessed or there's something, you know, spiritually wrong with this person, even though there might be. I'm not, you know, discounting that fact. But for me, the litmus test for if someone was possessed would be if this person exhibits signs or behaviors that are perhaps psychic. And when I mean psychic, I mean, are they able to know things that they shouldn't know? Okay, so if they can tell me that I have 55 cents, a packet of chewing gums, and a pen that does not work in my pocket without, you know, maybe them seeing my whole body, then I could probably say, ooh, there's something really strange going on here. Or if they, you know, one of the classic signs of possession, I think as understood by the Catholic Church, is things like glossolalia or someone's ability to speak in a language they have no way of knowing. So, you know, if someone is brought up in a, you know, a small little village in the middle of the Amazon jungle, they've never been out, they've never seen visitors, and then someday he starts talking in Korean. Right? Like, okay, how has this happened? Oh, for me, that would be a bit of a test. Now, seeing someone look at me strangely, smile at me, you know, growl, jump up and down, it might be frightening, but not necessarily supernatural.
I thought when I was listening to that story, it sounded a little bit like schizophrenia even. If you think about it, going into a different personality or a different aspect of your personality is... Would you have thought that at any point, Joe?
You know, that would probably be closer towards something like dissociative identity disorder or previously called multiple personality. Schizophrenia is kind of like when someone's perception of reality very significantly shifts or is very different from your and my reality. So if I'm sitting here and you're sitting here and we're seeing an empty room and someone is hearing voices or seeing a little yellow duck floating in the corner, right? Then, you know, that would probably be more signs of schizophrenia. But if someone is switching personality, so one moment I'm speaking to you like this, and the next moment I'm speaking like I'm a 5-year-old child, and
if you think about it, with him smiling like that, could he be living in an alternate reality? Like he sees a different plane. He's smiling.
Possibly, yeah.
You know, but you don't use la floating ducky. You've got duckies all in your room. You
should. I know.
An example. Okay. Danger. Don't. Yeah. So that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that, you know, that there could be that break in what we see as reality and he's seeing something else. So when he's smiling, we don't really know what he's smiling at. And that was the first thought that came into
and very much so. The other alternative explanation could be that this person has entered a trance state or an altered state of consciousness where they are kind of perceiving things a little bit differently than what we are, but not necessarily having that psychotic break.
Yes. So he could look at you. He could be smiling because you look like a giant ice cream. Possible?
Very possible.
I brought that back up again. Yes, I want ice cream.
I'm more like a rum and raisin, so.
And then the other thing was something that really caught me in that narration, looking deep into the eyes, you know, and that went on, that deep, dark, you know, and how they say eyes are the windows to the soul. How far do you think that goes? You know, it's like looking into a dark abyss. Mm. And that is what freaks me out. Not the scary smile, but the dark, deep eyes. And God knows where that's going to lead you. Wormhole to where?
I do want to point out. You can say it out loud so that Elvin can record it and I can send it to whoever.
Say what? I didn't hear it. What? What was said?
What was said?
What is Kim going on about?
Joe said marriage right after whatever statement that you said.
Yeah, you kind of said, like, you know, what would happen if someone looks deep into the abyss of your eyes? I said marriage.
Says the man of the house. If Joel is watching this, Joel, you can turn this into a meme and we can send it to Mrs. Dakota later on.
Yeah. Joel, go on, Joel. Kasihan, Joel.
Kasihan, Joel.
I wanted to point out.
Just remind us all, right, to wear sunglasses, okay?
I do want to point out, that would be my point as well, when you look into somebody's eye. I think a lot of us have actually experienced whereby we look somebody in the eyes and, you know, you can see a reflection of yourself, then, you know, you would be able to somehow communicate in a way to that person.
No, but Kim, it's very distracting these days. It's very hard to look somebody in the eyes because nowadays they don't even have real eyes. They're wearing those colored contact lenses. It's very distracting for me. I don't know where to look because they look like dolls, and that's even scarier.
Are you saying Akiat now is wearing the black contact lens, the one that similar to the guitarist in Limp Bizkit way that person wears? Is it that?
It's a possibility.
Okay.
Most of the times, I have to tell them my eyes are up here, not there. Up here, with my eyes.
You've been mentioned that a lot of times, is it? You've been told to do so a lot of times, is it, Joe?
That's correct.
good.
Unfortunately.
For me, right, guys, I have actually experienced a number of such cases when I go down and do investigation. And till today, call it whatever that it may be, whether it's a psychosis or a possession, being in the presence of someone in that state, I have never gotten used to it, never. And like this Virachai's confession to me, why I said at the start of the confession, it struck a chord because I have attended a few possession cases. In fact, my entire book on Supernatural Confessions, You Are Not Alone, is on a possession case that lasted for 2 years. And there were two cases this year that I attended. And it when you go down to the place, it's as if this story from what Virachai said. The victim is on the bed or sitting down and he's rocking. And for some reason, they always like to look at you in the eye. And a lot of spiritual masters will tell you, do not look at them in the eye. Whatever is inside this thing, they can actually, through your eyes, be able to read your entire life and use that against you. As you've seen some Hollywood movies where the possessed victim can tell you your sins and then embarrass you and weaken you. The whole point of a demonic possession or a jinn possession, depending on which culture you're from, a possession by a very strong entity is to take over the person's soul, to cause enough chaos around a person's life so that it weakens everyone and isolate the person. And the first thing that you can tell when a person is possessed or not is the eye. You can fake your behavior. You can be a world-class actor, but the eyes is the one that's the most telling. If you can bear to look into the person's eyes, that's where you can tell. And what is also mentioned in the story where after a certain time, you realize that the person's consciousness come back and sometimes they ask for help. Like, help me, right? Or I want water. Or they call, ma, right? But then the demon or the jinn soon takes over again and the eyes glaze over and you see it's a different sign. Now, I'm no medical expert, so I cannot tell you the difference between psychosis and possession. But for the possession cases that I have seen where spiritual masters are involved, the parents would tell me things like, my son did this, did this, did this, did this. Okay. I know some of you, like Ray, are saying, you only believe in the head turn 360. Okay. I have not seen the head turn 360 before.
I don't think you want to.
Yeah. I've not seen the backward walk. I've not seen any of that. But I've seen superhuman strength. I've seen speaking the voice in a different language. And I think, Joe, you mentioned, if a person does not know or is not aware of a certain language, but then it becomes proficient in that, that's also a sign. I've seen someone who can speak flawless Arabic when he shouldn't be able to do that. But then again, here's the caveat. They're from a Muslim family. So with the prayers and all that, he should be familiar with Arabic.
No, even if you're not very fluent in it, right? Joe was talking about how if somebody suddenly is able to speak in a language they've never been exposed to. Think about it. I always say the brain is such a powerful organ.
Yeah.
Could it at some point and somehow unlock part of your brain that is in charge of language?
Okay. You know? So my Chinese, everyone knows, is very jialat, right?
Knock you on the head a few times to unlock that part, is it?
Today, I was trying to tell my kid to eat his dinner, and I was trying to explain to him what scallop is. He said, Daddy, what is scallop? Because every Saturday morning, he has Chinese lesson. So I look at him, and I, you know, very confident, I go, scallop. Obviously, that's wrong. And then the wife came in and says, hai tai. I thought hai tai was actually seaweed. But now I realize hai tai is seaweed. Hai tai is scallop. High tide is when the water level is very high. So it all sounds the fucking same to me.
I can't tell one from the fucking behind. Clam. Everything is a clam.
Yeah, this is clever. So, but when I drink, right, and when I get drunk, especially when I used to be a younger man and I would like down bottles of whiskey by the bottles, I would be able to sing in karaoke bars in Cantonese flawless. A Beyond song with a Come Ting No, 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 Sweet Bugle. Flawless if I'm drunk. But if I'm not drunk, I cannot remember the words.
So the alcohol unlocks that part of your brain, does it?
Yes, yeah. It makes me a linguist. A cunning linguist.
I was thinking about that today. Oh my God, what a... Eugene, you're awesome.
Ayo!
All right. So that's the dissection for this particular episode. Akiet from Urachai, honestly, is one of the scariest confession today to begin the whole show with today. Anything to add, guys, before we go out to the next confession? Because it's 10:30. No, okay. It's all good. Next one is tall figure confessed by Aaliyah. And this one is voiced over by Linda Confield.
Hi there. I've just discovered your podcast. I must admit, it's very addictive. I've got a story I like to share as it scared the bejesus out of me at the time. My siblings and I grew up in Australia with my mum and dad. We often go back to Malaysia for holidays, mostly spending our time at my grandfather's house in Bangsa. My grandfather used to live in a very big house. At the time, I would have been around 18. I was living with him and his wife. I'd usually stay up late watching TV and chatting to my friends back home on the main floor. My bedroom was at the very bottom, whilst everyone else slept on the third. One night, I was watching TV on my own. It would have been around 2 a.m. I felt something pull my hair. I didn't think much of it at the time, as I knew I was leaning on it. My hair is quite long, and I usually keep it behind me, flowing down my back. So, thinking it was just me tugging on it, I flicked it forward over my head. A few minutes passed, and it happened again, only the tug was firmer. And since my hair was in fact draped over my chest, I definitely knew it was not me. I was scared. I turned the TV off and started walking towards the stairs down to where my bedroom was. The whole 3 minutes it took for me to turn off the lights, TV, and to walk down the two flights of stairs felt like an eternity, only because the whole time it felt as if there was a body pressed up against my back. At this point, I was absolutely terrified. I ran to my door and slammed it shut. In my rush to get to my room, I had forgotten to turn off the stairwell lights. As I sat on my bed staring at the door, I saw a shadow on the opposite side pacing back and forth. I knew for a fact that it wasn't an actual person. I am 100% sure of that. My grandfather and his wife were dead asleep at the time, and so were my cousins. Naturally, I didn't sleep at all that night. The next morning, I asked if I could move up to the same floor as them, making the excuse that I felt lonely on my own. That evening, I moved my belongings upstairs into my new room. I was very relieved to be where other people were. As I got ready to sleep, I closed the drapes, left my door open a touch, turned the lights off, the usual. At about 2 a.m., I woke up suddenly. No nightmares, no noises, just a sudden urge to break my sleep. I looked around the room, eyes stopping dead on the drapes. I'm not joking when I say I saw a man as tall as the roof just standing in front of the drapes, his back hunched, with red eyes. I couldn't make out any clothing or hair, or even facial features. Just a man with red eyes. I was absolutely petrified. I couldn't move. I couldn't scream. I was just frozen out of fear. I must have sat there for hours until I fell asleep again. The next morning, my auntie came to visit, and I told her what had happened. She looked at me with a shocked look on her face. She said, "Alia, have you heard of the superstition about houses?" I said, "No." And she continued on, "If you have a large house but do not have many people living in it, the dead can take over, good spirits and bad." It made perfect sense to me, considering this house was 5 stories tall, but it only had 4 occupants. I left that very day, and whenever we were to visit, I would never walk around that house alone. When I told my dad about it, he mentioned that when he was young, he too saw a tall figure standing in various places of the house. I'm 30 now, engaged, about to start a family, and I'm still terrified of that house. Safe to say they sold it, and I'll never have to enter it ever again.
Okay, for a moment there, I thought I went off into that house. So
abyss. You went into the abyss.
I went into the abyss. So I wanted to say that, you know how some houses just have this really heavy, ominous, foreboding sort of a vibe. Now, I do a little bit of urbex, and by little, I mean a lot. Anyway, there are houses like that where the minute you enter, the air is dank and, you know, it just smells foul, and all of that adds to the atmosphere of the place. Now, 5 stories, and how many people were living in that house?
4.
Yeah, that's an awful lot of space. And there is a saying, you know, that even these other energies seek refuge in places they need things to inhabit and stuff. Could it be a case of just a really large space? And when you speak, your voice echoes. That is in itself really quite scary, having all this space around you. It's so lonely. I can't imagine living in a house like that.
So do you think that loneliness contributes to the illusion of the tall men in the window?
I was going to go with trees. Did they mention any trees on the outside and how trees can cast shadows?
You know? But red eyes.
I was just at my girlfriend's house today, and she lives up on the second floor of a split-level house. And she told me that she had 2 snakes come into her house just from the trees. So when I looked at her giant big windows, it's a big house, and how you have 2 snakes come in with the trees and stuff. So I'm thinking for this house, could the trees be a contributing factor to how shadows are cast into the house to look like a tall man, a tall, long figure?
Okay, that is one. That is one. Yeah. I mean, possibility, yes. But there's also a mention of the father seeing the figure itself in the living room when he is watching TV. Could it be with the same shadow as well?
I mean, I'm not sure if it could be the same shadow. But a house that big, I imagine it would play with your mind. I mean, it would play with mine. If I had a house that big, what would frighten me more is not shadows, it's bloody cleaning it. 5 stories.
You got 5-story house, you got a maid lah, or 2 maids.
Yeah, you got a maid lah, you got a maid lah.
Mampus, the very thought of it is enough to scare the bejesus out of me. God.
Eugene, what is your take
on this? I see this kind of houses, every house has a guardian. And when you have a five-story house, you have not enough people living there. There is this whole energy vacuum where when the house is empty, this lack of a yang qi, ying qi will flow in. It's only the norm.
And that heaviness. Isn't it?
Yeah, heaviness. So it's
the stale air.
It can be interpreted in many different ways depending on different law, right? So in science, obviously with lack of human interaction, even things will just fall apart. Funny thing is, the more you use it, the less it decays. But if you leave an item untouched, time just wither it away. So with that in mind, there's a lot of negative energy in an empty space. Or they call it an empty energy, right? Negative energy in empty space. And you have not enough people. Even if you talk about feng shui, the place is going to be reeking with a lot of different stale air. Now, when you have this kind of situation in a place like this, a private house that's probably built on the land, now, you would also have possibly in the history of this story, which was not described, I'm guessing if the land itself might play a part. Now, why I say that is this. Your run-of-the-mill hantu, your spirit of the dead, spirit of the deceased, your jinn, or you know your wandering spirits, they don't come in a kind of tall, large, foreboding kind of shadow. That's usually the nature spirit. If you go to a forest area, the mountain area, your hantu gala, or your rock spirit, or the jinn, the nature jinn in the forest, even in Thailand, when you go and do your prayers in the forest, these are natural elements, entities that have been there for years and years and years. They would then appear in a very large, gigantic form. So my question to this story is, could that land, that house be built on the land where there is an entity, a garden entity or a nature entity that resides there? Because this house has not enough yang energy, the spirit is free to roam around in that place. And because many people have seen the spirit and it's made itself known to the inhabitants of the house without actually harming them, I'm beginning to think that this is actually a situation where an entity is bound to the land and it appears to the family because the house and the energy reverberates in a way that allows this entity to take shape and form and to have dominance in that place. So that's where I'm coming from.
Okay, so that it's not about the house, it's more to the land that the house was built on.
Yeah, it's more to the land than to the house. That's right. That's where I'm taking the story to.
Does opening windows allowing light, this question and statement is for Eugene. Does opening windows allowing light in, does that change the energy in the house?
Yes. For those of you who are into feng shui, please back me up on this. Again, I'm no expert, but I have spoken enough to feng shui masters, including the one that I just invited down to my house about a couple of weeks ago. He says opening the windows, allowing air to flow. First of all, feng shui talks about the flow of energy. So when something is stagnant and doesn't flow, that's when it creates bad mojo. But when you have wind flowing from one point to another point, that's where good feng shui is. But if you think about it from an angle of a rational science point of view, when you have wind blowing through, you know, you have fresh air. You have fresh air, you don't get sick so often.
Exactly, right? Because you've got things like mold growing on your walls and all that too.
Yeah. And also with sunlight coming in, you kill germs. So I get that whole nice balance between feng shui and science, at least corroborating that wind movement and science and sun would actually benefit the house. And in a spiritual form as well, the sun is what would chase away bad energy. This negative energy is afraid of the sun. Like if you are possessed or you are feeling unwell, you bathe flower water, you go to the sun. You know, you don't hide in the shadows. If your room is always dark, open up the curtain, let sunlight come in. So sun has always been a very natural and free weapon against a negative energy.
Against vampires as well.
Yes. So many different laws and culture all talks about the sun being a powerful weapon against the supernatural entities.
Yes.
Joe.
I'm laughing because Despol 7 wrote, Joe lights on but nobody home look. that's my thinking face, right? I don't think very often, and when I do, I look like this. So apologies. I'm actually listening. I don't have resting bitch face. I have resting dumb face. One of those things. Yeah. You know, this reminds me very much. And actually, I, you know, before I start, I probably have a question for Aaliyah, the person that kind of told the story. I'm curious as to what the shadows actually looked like when she saw the shadow figure, right? Did it look like a shadow on the wall? Did it look like a shadow that was standing away from the wall? Was the shadow a different shade of darkness? Because it kind of reminds me of the shadow people that's reported all around the world, where people report seeing these beings, these movements, these shadows that they report as being darker than the night around them. So they call it shadow because I suppose there's no real other term for it. And they see this quite often. And I'm wondering if this is kind of what this person saw. And Aaliyah, if you're there, if you can kind of write in the comments, that would be really appreciated.
Because so it was said in the story that it's tall figure, right? So this would be a humanoid figure.
A humanoid shape, definitely. Right? Yeah, totally. And, you know, the fact that it's tall and red eyes, and the red eyes is something that's quite a very interesting facet of this for me. You know, like, I don't know about you, but if you're walking out, like, for me, it's the forest, right? You're walking out in the forest at night and you see a pair of red eyes looking at you. Now, I
would say it could, depending on the height of it, what would I say?
You say owl. It's always the bloody owl. But, you know, that's actually my point, right? When human beings see red eyes, I think it kind of, it hooks on to a very evolutionary fear of predators. And I was reading one of the, you know, one of the books by Nick Redfern. He's a very prolific writer in I think the UK. And he speaks of beings called Cormans. And the Cormans are almost like tulpas, or, you know, things that take shape from collective unconscious. And what he reckons is there's these kind of like a class of beings that feed on fear. And so they actually take the form sometimes of things that you fear, but very often they appear as entities with red eyes.
So it takes on the form of something more tangible, a collective sometimes. Consciousness or a collective fear.
Yeah, sometimes. And when they don't, the characteristics of these things are red eyes. And I think because red eyes trigger something evolutionary inside of us, they trigger a human's sense of fear of things that are just outside the campfire light, just in the distance, in the light. And look, if this was a paranormal event, could it be this class of beings? Things that want fear and are feeding on that fear.
But if you say that it is a behavior that's driven by fear, it's to keep us safe, right? You don't leave the campfire.
Yes.
It's a fear that manifests itself.
Not necessarily. It's a fear that we have within us. But there's, you know, this prevailing theory in supernatural and paranormal circles is that entities that are really negative feed on fear. And what better to create fear in human beings than in hooking onto something that we are at a cellular DNA level, are shit scared of.
Okay. So you are saying that it's a being that is feeding on people's fear or whatever negative energy there is. That is what Aaliyah see in the grandfather's house.
And she did mention it's a humanoid figure. It's a human shape, right?
But there's no face. There's no clothes. I think there is no.
Was there a mention of red eyes?
Yeah, but there was a mention of red eyes. But with the red eyes, okay. My take on this, which leads to the next, know your hantu, is somehow what I feel that is actually in the grandfather's house is actually a saka that is kept by the grandfather or the step grandmother. It felt like a step grandmother because Aaliyah did not say it's a grandparents. It's my grandfather and the wife. So it could be a new wife and it could be something that it's together with the new wife that comes into the house. And you see, because Aaliyah is not the house owner, and it could be the saka could not kind of like
recognize her?
Yeah, recognize her. This is not the owner that I know. So if you come into the owner house, I would need to like, you know, check a little bit, you know, and see whether this is somebody that I need to chase off. I need to do something to hurt, to harm. But he's just, you know, checking on. Because you see, the incidents were not a lot of times. Like the father too. The father, you know, it's not a lot of time. But when the father saw the figure was just there. Nothing bad happened to the father. I believe at the time, the father stays in the house with the grandfather, right? But Alia, when Alia go to the house, Alia is actually a visitor. So the Saka or the being actually did a little harm on Alia, which he pulled on Alia's hair. But it never happened after that. It's because I somehow felt that the owner come and talk to the Saka and say, okay, I forgot to tell you, the Alia is actually my family member, so just leave her alone and don't touch her. You can be in the house, but don't.
That's actually really interesting. How does the Saka really recognize? It's like, do you have to tell them or do they need to be sent an email and memo? What? How do they get that notification?
And I want to also know, like, what is the Saka looking at? Like, you know, is it checking my, like, browsing history?
Mm.
Like, you know, like, when I have private time, is it looking at me?
One by one. Sonia's question is, how do you tell it? It's like how you tell a bodyguard, lah. When you have a bodyguard with you, let's say you have a bodyguard with you. Somebody came into your house. The bodyguard will have to check on that person, right? Until you tell the bodyguard, okay, this is my friend. Let him in. He's fine. Then after that, the bodyguard recognizes this person is a friend. Okay. You know, but you have to tell it to him.
Yeah, but is it like a proper procedure, you know? When you were doing your research for Saka, did any of that show up?
Not really. You just have to talk to it.
Okay. You don't have to do a ritual. Yeah. There's no ritual.
To invite or to get rid, there's a ritual. But to talk to it, it's just you have to talk to it.
Right.
Right. So on Joe's question is, I do not know how well involved Saka in technology. So I do not know whether he will be able to look into your browser history. And
thank God it doesn't.
What would it find there?
Yeah. Oh, BBC in Joe's Pornhub history. Yeah. So I don't think
British Broadcasting Corporation. That's what it sounds
like.
Hard Bodies is a weightlifting channel.
Big Blank Clock.
Yeah, Big Blank Clock, that's correct.
Yeah, Big Blank Clock. Yeah. I think somehow it felt like that is actually a Saka. Yes, in a way that it's a guardian that guards the house. And I do believe that this actually belongs to the family. But I do not know why the auntie actually mentioned, oh, the dad will come and, you know, take over the house, which would also lead to what Eugene mentioned earlier on, whereby, you know, it's because, or Sonia mentioned, you know, because the house is big, but not a lot of people in it. That's why spirits or stuff will, you know, stay in it. And since, there's a lot of rooms, why not stay here? So I suggest that for people who have big houses or mansion, you should do like what Hugh Hefner did. So you should throw parties every now and then to bring people in, to get the yin and yang energy balance so that, you know.
Yin and yang energy, is that what we're calling it now? We're calling it the yin and yang energy ritual. Okay.
That's what you came up with. Okay.
Is it yin yin yang or yang yang yin or yin 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 yin?
He's talking about bringing the 69 in, you know, Hugh Hefner, girls, the yin yang coming in.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I always tell my girlfriend when I'm having a party, just to balance up the energy.
You show up in her underwear, that party, is it that one?
old joke already. This week, new joke already.
I'm just reminding our ghostlings.
Ghostlings. Is that what we are calling our fans now? Ghostlings.
I think so. I like that.
Yeah, I like it too. So I think that is for me. I believe that it is a Saka. And I think we can move into the next segment of
Your Hantu. Correct. A lot of us are thinking, what's Isaka? In fact, Ray Lim is asking, Isaka Toyo? Yeah. Not to clear the air for all the ghostlings out there watching the show tonight. The next segment is called Know Your Hantu. And this is where every week we share a different kind of Hantu for you guys, just to sort of inform you guys what's out there. Because most of you already know Pontianak, Penanggal, Pocong, and that's about it, right? So on Supernatural Confessions, we want to sort of blow your mind with all these other Hantu superstitions, folklore around Asia, Southeast Asia. And today's episode on Know Your Hantu is on Saka. Right? Elvin, take it away.
For this episode of Know Your Hantu, we're going to talk about Saka. Although the word Saka itself has a few definitions, but for this, we are talking about a being that is believed from Shaitan or Jinn's group, which is kept for self-protection. Saka is said to come in all shapes and forms, and it is passed down from one generation to the next generation. Commonly, that is the practice. But there are mentions of Saka can be passed to whoever is willing to take ownership of the Saka from the original owner. As simple as shaking the original owner's hand and proclaim, Engkaulah sahabat aku, dunia dan akhirat, meaning you are my friend on earth and the afterworld. Saka has to be fed according to the original deal made by the first owner, and they would usually be addressed as Dato, friends, or names that are commonly used to address people that is close to us. Saka has to be passed on to the next person before the current owner passed, or else the owner would have difficulty passing on and the Saka would start to create havoc in the surrounding neighborhood. The longer a Saka is passed on from one generation to the next, the harder it is to be destroyed. And to get rid of it, Saka would be usually persuaded to eat in an acak, a container which later would be sealed and released in the waterway such as the river. Saka is usually obtained to protect oneself, to protect your belongings, or to harm people that the owner wish to hurt and many others. In old days, Saka is used to help owners in hunting, farming and other. Example, Saka Telinga or ear Saka helps their owner to be able to listen and track animals precisely during hunting. It is a wrongdoing in Islam to have a Saka, for it is similar to be practicing black magic.
Wow. Saka. So I've heard about Saka many times, especially in the Muslim community. They pass down the Saka from generation to generation, especially the Boyanis. Especially Boyanis are known to have jinn guardians. In this case, it's called Saka. So thanks, Kim, for the very nice mini documentary on Saka. Like what someone called it. I like it. This name. Encyclopedia Supernaturalist Time.
That should be the title of our next book.
Yeah. Supernatural.
Supernaturalist.
Encyclopedia Supernaturalist.
Nice. I also like what Debbie Sora says, and I kind of agree with her. Saka is not a friend usually. Once they forgot to feed it, it will eat the owner up. Well, I suppose it's like anything, right? Anything, like if you have a bodyguard, if you don't pay that bodyguard, he's going to come find you and exact his wages. And I think it's something that's quite similar to this.
That's Iman. Debbie Sora's Rex is Iman. So he said,
Okay.
Don't recognize some of these names, huh?
Yeah, I wanted to answer the question because there's a lot of people who is asking whereby it is similar. Is it similar to Chinese Xiao Gui or which is Toyol in Malay term?
No, I don't think so, right?
Child ghost. It is not. I would say it is actually yes, but Saka is more to like the umbrella that is all under, everything is underneath this Saka's name. Like for example, if you raise a Toyol, it is actually under Saka. It can be a Saka as well. But if you like in the Know Your Hantu part just now, I mentioned Saka Telinga, whereby it's also part of the Saka, whereby it helps you with listening to animals' movement during hunting. So all this saka serves a different purposes depending on when you ask for it, what do you require that saka to do? So, you know, you can like, okay, I want this to take care of the house. So the saka just come and like, okay, my job scope is just to take care of the house, so I take care of the house. But if you ask for like, okay, the bomo will say, or the shaman will say, okay, maybe this one, one chicken, lah. Then if you say, I want a saka who do everything like Doraemon like that, then the shaman will like, okay, this one, I need a farm of chicken. Then you have to give a farm of chicken. Lah. So, you know, the more powerful your saka is, the more you have to feed it.
Everything comes at a price.
Everything comes at a price, yes.
And I'm wondering if the saka actually came from the Dayaks rather than the Malays, right? Mm. Especially when it came to kind of hunting and stuff. Like, because my great-grandfather, and some of you kind of, if you've been following the channel, my mom did an interview, and you know, my great-grandfather was involved in a lot of kind of occultism in Singapore and Malaysia. Yeah. And he actually specifically went and did some training with the Dayaks in Borneo. Mm. So, and he had a saka that he actually passed on. He wanted to pass on to my grandmother and onto my mom, but instead an uncle, a lineal uncle, took over that spirit or that spiritual kind of path. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find it fascinating.
I think, yes, I've heard of my friends, which is a Dayak, whereby this story came from a friend who witnessed itself when he has a friend. This is a story of a friend witnessing something on a friend. So it's like, okay, let's say like this, I'm that friend. So we are sitting in the room. So this is the room, right? There's Joe, there's Eugene, there's Sonia. We are sitting in a room. So we're talking, then one friend just say like, okay, guys, by the way, I don't know whether you guys buy in this or not, but you know, recently I have a saka passed down to me from my father. So then the rest of the friends are like, this is, you know, crap lah, no bullshit lah, you know, we don't believe you. Then he said, okay, just tell me something so that I can prove it to you that he is here. So the friend said, okay, simple, just ask your saka to move anything. So he was just, that friend was just there and he was just pointing at the blanket behind them, right? So they were in a room, so there's a bunk beds, right? So there were blankets on the bunk beds. So he just pointed at the blanket and he was like, move the blanket. I mean, in Bahasa lah, of course, right? So move the blanket. So the rest of them actually saw something, picked up the blanket and placed it on the next bed. That is when the other friend is like, okay, you know what? if it's your saka, just take care of it. Don't get us into shit and stuff like that. We don't want hear knockings, shadows, come and visit us. You know, just keep him where he's supposed to be. So in Sarawak, if you ask a lot of people, the Dayaks and the Malay community especially, a lot of older generation, they would know the existence and they would actually have ever owned it, some of them.
So, I have a theory about sakas, you know. And I read about this in multiple books. These books were not about sakas, they were about gods and deities and demons, I mean the whole supernatural field. We think that in saka we are calling upon the powers of the supernatural to aid us, and in the belief of the Thais and the Chinese, where we keep spirits, or even the Malays, where we keep toyos, we feel that we have dominance over the supernatural beings. But in some other books and in some other school of thought, these are ancient entities that has long outlived your puny human life, and they don't see themselves as your pet. In fact, when you call upon them and they grant you a wish, they grant it. You want them to move a blanket from point A to point B, it's like that for them. But in return, they get your entire family line. They get you feeding them. They have you by the balls. You fail to feed me one time, I will crush you. It doesn't sound like a owner and a pet kind of situation.
Actually, it's the other way around.
It's the other way around, yeah. You call for help, they will really help you because it's they've easy got, for them.
Exactly. It's like you become their slave.
Yeah. For life.
Just their life, but several generations after.
Yeah, because their life is very long. Your puny life, they're going to take your entire bloodline. Yes. And some people have used Saka for to get rid of other people's to get rid of rivals, for break up families. All these are very minute in a supernatural worldview. Your puny heartbreak is an emotion that the spirits will don't understand. But if you want them to do something because of a heartbreak, because of a petty jealousy, they're willing to do it for you, because the bargain is always never going to be in your favor.
Yeah.
So, I mean, let's call it what it is. You are entering into a contract with spiritual entities. That's what it is.
Yeah.
You're entering into a contract, and the contract very rarely is hinged in your favor.
Yeah, it's never in your favor.
Never.
I like what KK Heng says. So Aladdin's Genie is a kind of Saka adapted by Disney into a fun cartoon where Aladdin's in control and the genie is a very nice guy who goes, "You never ever had a friend like me, dumb, 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 dumb." But in real life,
they normalized it.
You never ever will have a friend like me.
So if anybody hear this, whatever Eugene said now and say you're gonna like have a friend like me, when you get a Saka in your house, it's not gonna look like Will Smith, that I promise you. It will not be in blue color. It will not be fun. It will not be singing to you. It may be singing to you, but definitely not that tone. So I wanted to say again what I said last week. Whatever it is, you know, if you wanted to go after a girl, go the normal way. If you want to have your success in your career, your business, do it the proper way. If it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be. Don't get involved in the black magic. So get involved with, like, you know, the supernatural power to help you, because again, it's just not worth it.
I want to ask a question, Ken.
Yeah.
You know how you said that in the larger scheme of things, these entities or beings, they feed, they are being fed. Do they feed on negative energy? Let's say, for instance, when you break up with somebody or you fight with someone, there's a lot of negative energy, but it's still energy. Do they feed on that energy?
Okay, let me answer Sonia. We do not know whether these, whether the whole thing works like that or not. Because like what Joe mentioned earlier on, it could be like, for example, it could be like this. Jinn is a whole race, right? But there's a lot of different types of them. So it might be some, you know, their purpose is to get people's life, and some are just feeding on people's fear or negative energy. So I believe this goes to a different section of different types of them, although they are all under the same category, jinn. But I felt that they have different purposes that they serve. So
if you look at all of those things, right, they cause discord. Do they then feed off that negative energy that arise from such, you know?
Or maybe they're just attracted to it because that kind of energy is something that resonates so closely with them. You know, like when you take two tuning forks and you kind of bring them together, they both resonate at the same kind of frequency. And I'm wondering if it's like that. Not the fact that maybe it's not that they come and, like, you know, Pac-Man, they go, nah, 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 they go eat the energy, but rather when something vibrates in that way, you bring something close to that, you know, something vibrates in the same way as that.
We were talking about something else before the show about this. So now I cannot focus on whenever Joe do this and, you know, it vibrates here and vibrates here.
Kim, Eugene and I were saying that this is 6 inches. Yeah. That's 6 inches. Okay, just saying.
What kind of measurements are you using? My God.
The correct ones.
The Asian measurement. Okay, so I think that's pretty much about Know Your Hunter. We still have another confession, but we don't have the time. So, Eugene, I think we better go to the next one.
Thank you for that, Kim. The final confessions for tonight, now it's 11:13, by the way, is the Mutiara Hotel by Sekolastika. This one is voiced by the second sexiest voice in whole of Supernatural Confessions, Sonia Kurana. Elvin, take it away.
We Could Have Knocked First by Sekolastika Po. My story that happened at Mutiara Beach Resort Penang might not be as exciting as others, but I'm just sharing what happened. My memory faded, so I will just tell from what I remember. For your information, the tsunami occurred on the 26th of December, 2004, and I went on the Penang trip in 2005. Rumor has it that there was a lot of death at the hotel during that period. So, here is my story. I'm a Malaysian, raised in Terengganu. And after my SPM, I moved to Kampar, Perak, to continue my studies in hospitality and tourism in TARC, now known as UTRA. During my first semester year, the college arranged a trip to Penang, and I remember arriving at this hotel in the afternoon. As a teenager, everyone was excited and making a huge hoo-ha. We got the family room, and I believe they connected two rooms together with a big balcony. So, as a student, everyone was so excited about it. No one actually followed the rules of knocking the door before opening the hotel room, flushing the toilet, etc. My classmates all rushed in, making loud sounds and noises, jumping on the bed, laughing around, almost every evening. All of us went down for dinner, and that is when things get a bit spooky. As teenagers, they brought along poker cards, and while they were playing in the other room, the other group of us was in the other room. We decided to play a game like catching chicken or something like that, but I can't remember now. And we decided to not turn the lights on, as there were lights from the other room. I'm not sure why one of my classmates took the white sheet from the bed and wrapped himself from head to toe, only showing his face. Then all of us were on the bed, and suddenly he just jumped and did a roaring sound. Other girls were shocked by that and ran away. But I was stunned and couldn't move. I looked at him straight in the eyes, and I swear it was bloodshot red. He was inches away when my classmate dragged me from the bed, and we ran into the other room where the other boys were playing poker, and we closed the door. I don't quite remember what happened after that, because all I remembered was I was sitting on the chair and looking at the door, shivering in fear, because I feared he would suddenly come into the room. Then after a while, what we did was every one of us kneeled down, facing towards the balcony, and sincerely apologizing to whoever or whatever is in the room. I think nothing happened after that, because I have no memories of the next episode of Scary Encounters. And that is my scary encounter staying in Mutiara Resort Hotel, Penang.
Mutiara Hotel Resort. That hotel, I think, has popped up on my radar a couple of times. People have mentioned Mutiara Hotel, right?
I remember that. Yeah.
You guys remember what's the stuff that you remember, Joe? Mutiara?
Someone had posted something about going there to stay and like seeing entities, because I remember that name Mutiara, because it's quite a memorable name.
Oh, what happened to...
Oh, it's abandoned. So this hotel is abandoned. I'm just kind of checking it out. It's the abandoned Penang Mutiara Hotel.
Yeah. I remember one of the stories that I mentioned about the same hotel. There was a trend that time posting in that in our group whereby everybody was sharing their own experience. Mm-hmm. So I remember one of the confessors' story was they were just passing by the hotel. They were just passing by because the hotel is already abandoned, like the one that you see now in the picture of Google. So it's already abandoned. So they were just passing by, and then suddenly I think one of the friend saw lights inside. As in, you know, somebody is with a torchlight or you know something like that. So him with his filthy mouth said, "Wow, the ghost must be having a party lah inside, so much fun." And then something happened to him, and I think he somehow it was just quiet all of a sudden, and then after that he started to do something to harm himself. Then after that, the friend actually brought him back to where he said what he said, and actually asked him to apologize. And the rest of friends also apologized at the same time and say, because of his filthy mouth and stuff like that happened. So that was the one that I remember. It's also the same hotel.
I find ghosts to be much more forgiving than humans. You go over there, you say you're sorry, I've done wrong, and then they okay, cool.
Okay, no worries. Yeah,
we're cool now. We're chill, bro.
And for human, we bring our anger for until the next generation, right?
No, no, no. I get over in 5 seconds. I know people take 3 days, 2 days, overnight, something a week long, and then they mull over and over and over again. Sometimes they can't even sleep. I don't know. Sometimes dealing with ghosts is easier than dealing with human beings, I would say.
Preach, brother, preach.
It sounds like you've been ghosted.
No. Only young people get ghosted. Back in our era, no one that term didn't even exist. So okay, when it comes to hotel stories, guys, you know where I stand. I think along with some of the viewers that we have tonight, people just said all hotels are haunted. You give me a hotel story and it's a ghost story, I'm gonna go, yeah. I know. Hotel story, right? Haunted, right? Yeah, confirm. Must be that too.
Is there any explanation from the Supernational? Because I'm staying on Eugene's side as well. All hotels are... I mean, there are some hotels that is dirtier than a lot more others, but like Mutiara, like that. That's why it's closed down, right? Mm. So, but there are some that is just mild, but I have not heard of one that is... Nothing happened there. I've not heard of one.
I mean, this particular one... Oh, we said the same thing.
I know. No, we're going to go in the same direction, Sonia. So, no, take the lead.
No, it's okay. You go ahead.
No, you go ahead, la.
Tak apa lah, you go lah.
Okay lah, kak. No. What I was going to say was that there was nothing in this story that, really piqued my interest in terms of whether there was something supernatural happening. I think everything that, happened in this story, in my opinion, could be explained, right? Mm. And sometimes it is the reputation of things that can create stories,
It's a preconceived thing, isn't it?
Yeah, we have biases, right?
Yes.
Like, if no one told me this room was haunted and suddenly... a book fell off from the bookshelf, I will have a tendency to go, I didn't place that book properly, it fell down. Mm. Right?
Wow. The ability
What happened?
I don't know. I would think a book falls off my shelf, straight up, first thought, is the hunt tool.
No, it happened. I was at my friend's place today and it happened. She closed the door and then the book just jumps off the shelf. And she said, oh my God, it happens all the time. It's always the same book and it's always the same position. And then... Yeah. Okay, but then the hantu camp would go, oh, it's the hantu. Hey, yeah. I tested it out. So we put the book back, then I close the door, and then the book jumps. So you know what? Oh. Unless you can indefinitely prove it
it's vibrations.
Yeah.
Vibrations.
Next time, try to put like the book in a different position. Yeah, if you close the door, then that book still falls off. Then we have a confession that we...
No, yeah, but in this case, it clearly was, right? And then with hotel rooms, and in the story, they talked about how great tragedy had happened, right? Penang suffered, that coast suffered during... the Boxing Day tsunami. So you already have these stories in your head. So many people died. It must have been horrendous, horrible death, being crushed by things as the water came into the rooms, drowning. These are all very painful ways to die. So you come in with that with that thought process and all of that already. It can't possibly be easy.
Oh, well. Okay, so this one, I think this divided down the line, there is a lot of explanation that can go on for a hantu story like that. Because when unless a story really have all the dots and details that is ironclad, most of these hotel stories, school stories, army stories, they're interesting stories, of course. We love every single one of them, but it's always going to fall into one or the other camp, right? But it's really 11:22 and we have an awesome, awesome show tonight, featured at 11:30. Also, the confessor, Afat, is online right now.
Hey, Afat!
We've been chatting with people. He has already introduced himself just now, so I know he's not going for anonymity. His name is Dilly Boy Official on the group chat right now. You can go and talk to him. We want to show Afat's promo for tonight. Alvin, take it away.
Kau nak berbicara tidak? Yeah, I always burp. Literally always burp. The kakak that treat me, right, say that whenever you burp, right, it's an indication that they are there. Yeah.
So they are here right now knowing that they'll be having this interview.
Maybe, but the thing is that they don't disturb anyone else. They don't bother other people. They just bother me in a way whereby they won't like show themselves. They won't like appear where we can see them or what. But it's just like in me. It's really hard to explain because I myself don't believe in such things. And then when it comes to know myself, so I was like, it's very hard for me to find an answer to it.
Wow. I forgot to tell you guys that the footage may be disturbing to some, so viewers' discretion is advised.
Mm-hmm. after the video,
yeah,
is
that's
yeah. Okay. Afad is still suffering from the afflictions. The genes are still in him, but I find that he has a very positive demeanor. He takes it as it comes. He says, "What can I do? I've been trying to help. I've been praying, but it's still there." And he finds. I'm glad he finds he's able to make light of the matter, and he is. Oh, you see him laughing on the confession, guys, but he's not having a good time in life. In fact, he has attempted suicide 15 times. If you look at the feature later on, before 2017 and after 2017, the changes were enormous. He has gone through a bit of transformation, and in this feature confession tonight, it's about black magic being cast, a curse being put on someone because of business rivalry. And not all curses can be easily removed. Even after you go see spiritual masters, he told me it took 10, it can take up to 10 years, and then it's maybe. And there's not just one in him, but legion, 11 of them in him right now taking turns. And the whole point of this gene is not to kill him. They don't want to kill him. They're going to destroy him from inside out and make him want to kill himself. That is some kind of really wet way of putting a curse on somebody.
Yeah. I also wanted to say, ladies and gentlemen watching this, Afad is together with us in the comment section. Whatever that you see on the video, it's have been done by the force that we cannot be seen. There's a lot of offers. Even Sonia, who have seen Afad herself, it's a lot of things that cannot be explained because he have seen the doctors. He have went to hospitals numerous times. There are no scientific ways to explain what happened to him. Whatever that you see, how he look like now, later in the video at 11:30 on the premiere, we're going to show you how Afad looked like before. And it's a really, really big changes. And it's a terrible times that Afad is going now. I think I can, on behalf of the whole team of Supernatural, the whole family of Supernatural Confessions, Afad, stay strong. And yes. always keep God in mind. And, you know, whatever it is, God's will, hopefully that he will help. Because I, as the person who just edited the video, right? I just edited the video. I just need to cut it, and then Eugene sent me all the things that Afad sent to him. Throughout the whole process of cutting it, me myself felt really, really bad, really, really heavy, and we have nothing to offer to Afad but to really wish you, hopefully everything will be well soon.
Mm. Yes, I was there when we were filming it, you know. Afad, my heart goes out to you. Listening to your story, it broke my heart. And then seeing your before picture, strapping young, handsome men, and, you know, being there, feeling, listening.
And whether anyone believes it or not, whether they believe it's supernatural, whether they believe it's psychological, I think we can all agree that someone is suffering.
Yes.
And that we need to have compassion for that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Woo! So it's been a wonderful sharing session with you guys every Friday. We are here every Friday, 10 p.m., 11:30, week after week. And people have asked us when, because you know that we're going to take a short break after the our last show for this season for 2021 will be on the 29th of October. That's a Friday before Halloween. And every year, Halloween, we just take a short break and we come back at the end of the year, around December. We may come by, pop by, you know, from time to time with an impromptu live stream show. But we will be taking a break. We're going to make some changes. Obviously, upgrading our system, getting new cameras, getting new setup is priority. In fact, if you have seen how we first started off 2 years ago, it was just some lousy, cheapo camera, maybe like even my laptop screen, no mics, nothing. And then what you get us today with a little bit more posh setup. And we always take that challenge to the next level. And it's always because of you guys who have been encouraging us, watching us week after week, giving us your support, that this was even possible. And when you asked me 2 years ago, when will I ever stop Supernatural Confessions? I said, when the confessions stop coming in, I will stop the show. And today, that has never happened. So thank you all so much for contacting me, giving me your stories. As always, if you want to send your story, supernaturalconfessions.com is the place to go to. Check out the link. You can actually WhatsApp me. My phone number is there, guys, on the website. So that's how open and transparent I am. Because being involved in Supernatural Confessions, my entire aim is to destigmatize the whole idea that haunting and possessions and afflictions, supernatural afflictions, is something embarrassed to talk about. No, I put my number there. Contact me, message me, send me your mail, send me your message, whatever. Supernaturalconfessions.com. Just get in touch with me, okay? So we have come to the end of today's Friday Night Live show. We will be back again next Friday, hopefully with better technical support this time, stream strength. But 11:30 now, we're going to head off to the next show right after this. But before that, let's say goodbye first, Joe.
Once again, guys, SC would not be anywhere without the fans and the family. So thank you so much for joining us every Friday night and every day. Keep the Facebook kind of posts coming. And, you know, I think the more you delve into the supernatural and the paranormal, there are more questions and very rarely are there answers. Thanks, guys.
Sonia.
Oh, me. Okay. So, guys, thanks so much for tuning in. You are the reason we are here in the first place. I'll see you guys on Thursday for Where is Chi-Chi? Mm-hmm. And let me just say that I usually have a super rational explanation or reason for most things, but that's debatable, isn't it?
Weeks after weeks, Sonia's moss is getting longer and longer and longer. So hopefully it will slowly become almost a very few. Then hopefully one day she will sit on our side and say, it must be
the hantu.
Well, so thank you very much. You can wish.
We can always wish like a normal person. We will never get a saka to change.
Don't do that. Never do that.
Never. Don't do that.
Okay, once again, ladies and gentlemen. I have sharp things.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening in. Every Friday is like any other Friday. It's always been great and fun. Although today is a little bit heavy. And the story and the video also that we're going to see later on. So remember, next week is Where is Chi-Chi, right? Thursday. Remember to tune in. And the good news happening with Elvin, me and Joe, that we're going to release it very, very soon. Once again, I'm Kim. Thank you very much for listening in. And whatever you don't see doesn't mean it is not there.
My name is Eugene. Good night. You're not alone.
What did you find?
You are listening to Supernatural Confessions.